and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show that explores all avenues of transformation and aims to offer some nuggets of gold that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, although sometimes that might feel counterintuitive, just like a bird, the nightingale, singing out in the dark. I'm JJ, otherwise known as the Practical Alchemist, and I am very happy that you could join me today. My guest today is medical herbalist Nathaniel Hughes, the founder of the School of Intuitive Herbalism. He's also the author and collaborator with artist Fiona Owen on a wonderful book and card deck, Hot Off the Presses. The book is called Wild Enchantments, and it invites readers to move beyond traditional uses of herbs as remedies. More than a book, it's a call to pay attention to the ancient wisdom held within the natural world, and having delved into the words and illustrations, I'd say it offers a beautiful alchemical path that I've been thoroughly enjoying. I started off by asking Nathaniel what the intention was behind this beautiful collaboration of words and illustrations. Here's Nathaniel.
So I think underlying it was we wanted to encourage people to step into their fascination with plants and give them some doorways to help them do that. So instead of telling people about plants, what we've done is really approach it more in a more lyrical way with storytelling, the artwork rich in symbolism, and the text is entirely experiential. So it's based on my experiences. I've been teaching for about 20 years, so the experiences of all my students and my clients. And what we're hoping is that by sharing actual experiences, we help encourage people to go deeper into their experiences. There's something about creating a space for us to really notice what's happening with a plant, slowing down enough for that to happen. But it's not just that, it's also really validating those experiences and taking those as meaningful and realizing that what's happening in this particular dynamic, this particular relationship, you and the plant, is unique to you, but it's also important. So there's something about really encouraging relationship in this herbal, as opposed to giving information.
And also not referring to plants as objects in a way, which is what a lot of herbals do. Plants are seen as a resource. They're seen just as an object, maybe, yes, growing in nature, but you take it much further than that. There's much more. Now, I've used the words immersive and sumptuous because Fiona's paintings are just beautiful. I could lose myself in any one of them. So it is this immersive experience, and you do find, as I'm reading through some of the chapters, I find myself really falling into that correspondence, even though I'm not in front of the actual plant. Mm-hmm. Was that part of the intention?
Oh, absolutely. So in some ways, I mean, it's called Wild Enchantments, and the idea is that as you read each chapter, you gradually find yourself in a realm of experience that is very attuned to that plant. And the same, looking at the paintings, and the more you work with them, the stronger that effect becomes. So they're literally creating a doorway to enter into a realm of experience that hopefully helps people then go to the actual plant and deepen that with the actual plant. So it's a bit like creating doorways in consciousness that encourage and give people some tools to go into that.
Yeah, I can see that. And the pictures are so beautifully done. And I'm just looking at the front cover and I'm seeing this beautiful bower of roses, but also the rose hips, because of course, you know, that's the rose hips are as important as the flowers. And then we have moths around and we have all sorts of beautiful scenery, and we see the roots of the plant as well. And there is a lot of symbolism in there, but it's so, I mean, I see I think I see the feminine symbol on the top right there of the rose picture. And then you've got a bird singing I'm not sure whether that's a thrush, but it looks like it might be in the middle of the rose bush. And so you've got this whole landscape that I could spend ages just looking at and diving into. And the rose is one of my favorite plants. I'm sure I'm not alone in that. You've got the smell, but the dog rose is just beautiful. And that's a plant that I've known all my life, really, and always enjoyed. Always loved meeting it when I've gone for a walk in the countryside or along the shore, even because it grows quite a lot along the shore here where I live. And then just, grazing on the rose hips in winter, or not in winter, but in autumn. And, just tasting the fruit. And then I've talked a lot about rose hip syrup. And I do tend to forage for rose hips in autumn and make rose hip syrup now, just as a source of vitamin C in winter. But in one painting, you've got all of these elements, and I love the way that Fiona has brought all of those together. And it's not just the rose, with all of the plants, 33 plants, I note as well. Was that deliberate?
Yes. So I think, the level of detail in the paintings, hopefully what that means is each person finds a different doorway in. For some people, it might be the geometries. For some people, it might be the animals. For some people, it might be the ogham. Or so there's five different people will find different things to speak to them in the same painting, and that's part of the idea here, is
Yeah.
to encourage that.
Well, I can see that. I can see it. And so you have the book, and you also have a deck of oracle cards. I don't think that's the right way to describe them. Do you call them oracle cards?
I think they can be used as oracle cards. I think for sure they can be used as oracle cards. We tend to call them plant wisdom cards
Yeah.
because there's so many different ways you could work with them. I mean, the thing that's always been close to my heart is the way we've designed the box for them is it doubles up as a frame. And the idea being you can just work with one plant and put that on a shrine and have that as a meditation point over a whole moon cycle.
Lovely,
In
lovely
that
idea.
time, you're committing to deepening into knowing that plant. So it provides quite a useful anchor point, rich in the symbolism, for you to then keep coming back to and then reference to your own experiences. That's the bit that speaks to me most. As an oracle, they do. I'd say there's definitely a learning curve with them because we've consciously chosen not to put any words, not even the plant name, on the cards.
Yeah, I noticed that.
That was very
Interestingly, yeah.
intentional. Yeah, that was very intentional because the last thing we wanted to do, either with the artwork or with the writing, was to box anything in or kind of limit it by words. So there's definitely a bit of a learning curve of starting to recognize, get to know each of the plants a bit, spend your own time with them. And of course, the deeper your connection with each of these plants, the more powerful it becomes as an oracle deck.
Yeah, I can see that. And, I did work with them a little bit before we started recording this. And the first card that I drew was the was Angelica. And Angelica is, I mean, it's just such a statuesque, beautiful card. But when I read some of the words associated with them, and you're very clear that these words aren't meant to be chapter and verse of our experience with, they're just, it's you talk about a correspondence, and you talk about forming a relationship with, and they're maybe just guides to forming that relationship. But it really spoke to me because Angelica is such a tall plant, and then we have swans rising up, flying up out of the marshy land. We've got some water behind the plant, and I've always loved Angelica. I've always loved the taste of candied Angelica as a child. We used to get it on cakes as a child, and I loved that. I've never tasted the raw root, but I've always adored the taste of Angelica. And then I see that it's some of the correspondences are with breath, with opening up our breath, of soaring high. And it just so spoke to me in that moment. I absolutely loved it. But you're right. I mean, I kind of know what most of the plants here look like. So I know what I'm looking for when I draw a card. But for a lot of people, it will take a little bit of a learning curve, won't it?
I think it's intended that way. It's intended that something that you could keep on learning from for years. It's very dense in doorways. And if you were to follow every one we suggested, it would keep you busy for quite a while, I think. So hopefully what happens is you just go to what you're drawn to, and those are your starting point with any plant. But yes, and you know, you talk about Angelica and the breath. I mean, what's really important to me is absolutely everything is a real life experience. And as such, it's also possible to experience. So for instance, with Angelica, I must have held 50, 100 ritual circles with Angelica. And even though there's a variation in each individual's experience of working with Angelica, there are themes that are constant amongst that individual variation. And bit by bit, you start to learn what those themes are. And for instance, with Angelica and breath, the theme of feeling the Angelica touch something within the breathing and the lungs, and the sense of expansion, the sense of opening up into a bigness of self and of breath, is definitely a very constant theme whenever I've worked ritually with Angelica. And you know, everybody's going to experience that differently. And it's not always as straightforward as the plant gives this invitation and you get this lovely experience of expansion. A lot of the time, it can actually be the opposite. So for instance, if for instance, there is a lot of congestion or a lot of grief held in the lungs, it might be that you work with Angelica and it's as if the Angelica shines a spotlight on that.
Yeah.
And you actually become more aware of the congestion and the contraction. Okay, so this is a really important point. It's moving away from the idea that you take something and something happens.
Yes.
That you approach the plant as a teacher, and that teacher reflects something back to you. It doesn't just fix you. It doesn't just solve a problem. It gives you a reflection of what's actually going on within you. And that's where the deeper teachings are, is the engagement with the reflection the plants give. And so that's very much an underlying principle in the book and in the school, is we're calling on plants as teachers, as mirrors, not so much as medicines. And it's a very different approach.
I just love that concept. Now, Nathaniel mentioned the Ogham, and if you're unfamiliar with the term, it's an ancient Celtic alphabet that's been used for divination. There's a feast of symbolism throughout Fiona Owen's illustrations, which, by the way, are originally painted in oil and would take months to complete. On the back of the cards, you'll find the triple moon symbol, and that represents maiden, mother and crone. And then there's a labyrinth in the middle of that, the symbology once again supporting the alchemy. Time to take a short break right now. Stay tuned for more wisdom from Nathaniel Hughes right after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ Stenhouse, the practical alchemist, and intuitive herbalist Nathaniel Hughes, collaborator on the sumptuous book and card deck, Wild Enchantments. I loved what Nathaniel was saying before the break about this different approach to plants, interacting with them as teachers rather than just as a medicine. He explains the concept really well here.
I think a really good example would be the difference between just having a cup of tea with a friend, and that's great. You know, it's a social thing. It's enjoyable. I do it all the time. I'm
me
just
too.
Talking about sort of normal tea, builder's tea.
Yeah, me too.
Between that and spending 2 hours in a tea ceremony where you're spending half an hour sipping and meeting.
I love that. Yes.
It's the same plant, The difference is the intention we're bringing to it.
And that's a brilliant way. It's a brilliant way of describing it. Yeah.
So we're wanting to encourage this intention of reverence, of the trust and belief that there is so much more to learn here,
mm-hmm.
and the trust and belief that there is a teacher within this plant that can teach, that can change us if we want it to. And so it's not a question of what plant and how much. This is what I've discovered, you know, in my time in clinic. What seems to be more important is how are we approaching this? What is our implicit intention? When we take a plant, what is our implicit intention? Because often we would just get that reflected back. If it's for something to happen, there might be something happens. If it's to receive a teaching, then we receive a teaching. So there's something about being really clear how we are approaching. And with that, moving away from what's happened with a lot of things, and I guess this is just part of late stage capitalism, is a commodification of everything.
Yeah. And that's everything what I was trying to get at, kind of, right? Yeah. This is a commodification of herbs. Yeah.
It becomes a commodity. It becomes a product with a specific use that is marketed for that specific use.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. But you're not even scratching the surface of what each plant can be. And that's what we want to encourage, is to dive beyond that surface level that's very prevalent in our culture,
yeah,
into these plants as living beings that actually predate us in evolutionary terms. You know, they're way older than us. They've gone through many iterations of the world and nature, and all of that is woven into their being, into their genetics, into their structure, into everything. And so that wisdom of millions of years of evolution is there within them. And I do think that that's what is touched when we work with a plant, is their ancient wisdom awakens our ancient wisdom. I think that's part of what happens when we approach plants like this, is it's an awakening of something we actually already know in ourselves. And the plants touch that.
And I think that I've been sensing some of that as I've worked with the book and the cards in a very small way so far, because, you know, we've just seen the book come out. And I got that sense, and I got that sense of, even though I am not in front of the actual plant, mm-hmm. I get the sense, because the images are so beautiful and the words are so beautifully written, I have to say, I get the sense of being in the presence of the plant. And of course, that takes us back to, you know, the quantum effect, et cetera, et cetera. Nothing, we're not separate from anything. And so we can put our conscience or consciousness onto a plant, even though it's not actually physically there in front of us. And, you know, we don't have to pick a plant to take it home and, you know, work with it or anything like that. So I found that really refreshing.
Well, that's really good to hear. I mean, that was the intention. And of course, you know, a painting and words are derivative. They're not the actual plant.
Yes.
And so we're very aware of that. You know, it's the best we can do to bring something of that consciousness through. And I learned something in the writing process, and I think this is me just slowly kind of maturing as a writer, because this is our third book now, and starting to understand what writing in this way felt like. And I realized that what had to happen is I had to feel the plant in the room with me.
Mm.
I had to feel its presence. And the words that came, it's as if they gave form to the outline of this presence. The words can never be the plant themselves, but they can point in the direction.
Exactly.
So it felt like my job as a writer was to just stay within the realm of this presence and let the words flow in that resonated with it and pointed towards it. And once I clocked that, it was just such a joy to write each chapter.
I love that. I love that. And while you're describing that process, it reminds me of an artist, Mark Rothko. And the first time I ever, there used to be a big room in the old Tate Modern gallery in London where there were just Rothkos on every wall. And I remember the first time I went into that room, I was about 15. And I was absolutely blown away. Now, these are just huge, huge, huge canvases with just blocks of color, but there was something about them. And I felt a presence. I felt something from them. And many years later, I read that Rothko, when he was painting, cut himself off from everything, you know, shut himself away in a room and meditated and prayed while he was painting. So his entire consciousness was going onto that canvas. And I thought, that's what you can feel.
Oh, I recognize that. And it would seem a good point to apologize to all those friends that I neglected. Because once I just needed to be in that monofocus.
Yes.
Of prayer. Because it was that so clear that if I wasn't, nothing came through that was any good. The writing was no good. But when I was in that place of prayer, then the words flowed and they had their own dance to them. But I sort of discovered that the muse is very demanding of one's attention.
Yes,
and exactly. And I think quite jealous, potentially, quite jealous. So I've had to give an immense amount of my energy to that this past year in particular. I'm glad, but it's definitely at the cost of not being in the world in other ways.
So being absolutely, yeah. And it is really not quite being in the world. You're sort of in a, and you talk about liminal spaces. So you're in a kind of a liminal space when you're doing it that way. And so tell me, talk a little bit more about this liminal space that you're inviting people into.
Oh, okay. I mean, liminality is such a core concept within all my work. And I guess I would say that it's similar to the experience of what happens at dusk or dawn, or what happens, say you're walking in a wood and you just suddenly notice your mind has gone quiet and you're feeling the presence of the wood around you. Or you're maybe walking by the sea and suddenly everything else has disappeared and it's just you and the rocks and the cliff and the sea. It's going into a different realm of experience that where the mind isn't involved. It's an experiential place where the whole body is in a flow and a flux with whatever you're in a relationship with. And I think I would discern a liminal space from a space of mentation, a space of thought and making sense of and processing. And of course, you know, our culture tends to still prioritize mentation as a desirable thing to do, to be able to think rationally, to form ideas, to put them into words clearly. But to go into this realm of experience actually often means dropping deeper into the body, dropping into the heart, dropping into the breath, dropping into the physical body, and coming into a place of receptivity and mutability. You know, I've been teaching over 20 years now. And what I notice is when people start this sort of work, they would drop into a place of experience and often they would bounce right back up to their minds to try and make sense of it. And so they might spend 10 seconds or less in a realm of experience and then 10 minutes analyzing the experience.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think there's something we can cultivate, which is where we stay in that liminal space, stop trying to analyze and make sense until it's time to, and just let that experience flow through us. And that's a large part of, I guess, what I see deepen in students in the school. The longer they do it, the more able they are to drop into that space of conscious dreaming, you could say, of allowing the presences around us to affect us and allowing ourselves to be moved by them.
Yeah. And some people might maybe describe it as allowing spirit to flow through you. Yeah. You know, people who are of that mind, that mindset. Yeah.
Yeah. I had a very interesting discussion. There's a very radical priest in Stroud called Simon. And we once met up for a walk and he was fascinated about how to listen to how to feel trees. And one bit I remember from that walk was, he was wondering if the consciousness or the energies of trees was an aspect of the Holy Spirit.
Uh-huh.
Of course, for him, his model is the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And it was, I just was really touched of thinking that from his perspective, within that Christian modality, the voice of each tree was a fragment or a prism or a particular vibration of Holy Spirit speaking through. So yeah, that was
Yeah, that is really interesting, isn't it? But it in the end, I think it probably always comes down to the same thing. That it is just consciousness, it is just spirit, whatever you want to call it, it's the same thing, I think, that we're all trying to describe and words don't often
No.
allow us to.
Well, that's one thing I really like in the book. We've drawn on Kennings a lot. Did you notice that?
I did, yeah, I did.
And the idea of Kennings, they're pairs of words that somehow, when you put the words together, they evoke something more than each word individually. So it's trying to get beyond the constraints of language into something a bit more poetic, a bit more lyrical that evokes a feeling.
Yeah, I did notice that. And I mean, also just ways of describing, very simple things like St. John's wort. There's three lines here: radiant sword, seer of light, holy anointment, talking of religion, holy anointment, piercing rays, shrinking mental demons to their true size. Now, that's a poetic way of describing how St. John's wort might work with a person, with a being. And rose, you've got few herbs have quite the power to gather scattered parts of ourselves as rose, to soften, warm, and open our hearts to the very things we are most scared of, which is something that I recognize with rose as well, that softening of the heart and opening, and yeah, opening you to the things that you're scared of. There's a dance in the writing that I think is really beautiful to partner with when you read the book.
Yeah, thank you. No, I really enjoyed that aspect of it, and as much as possible, the prose slips into the lyrical and then comes back to the slightly more pragmatic, and then and I kind of like to have a bit of a to and fro there, because grounding it in a sort of manifest pragmatic, which is also why we've included a lot of endnotes with all the research
you
papers.
Have, yeah,
As
you
well,
have.
and each chapter has a slightly more pragmatic kind of functional ending part.
Yeah.
So there's something about seeing how these can weave together, how the dream can weave with manifest reality, because too much in the reductionism, and you lose the dream, you lose the magic, and too much in the dream, and it can easily become an escapism from manifest reality. So for me, the sweet spot is where you can learn to dance between the two. You can let your dreams inform your manifest reality, and let your manifest reality deepen your dream. So there's this idea of the lemniscate flowing through the whole book.
Yeah, I love that. I love it. And, so you have not just herbs, as in flowers and plants that flower. You have the fly agaric. You mentioned that, which a lot of people will be aware of as we come up to Christmas, as the red mushroom with white spots. Mm-hmm. And you talk about the fly agaric, you talk about trees, you have hawthorn and you have elder, two favorites of mine, and two trees that I regularly will gather the berries from again in autumn, but also the flowers. I was born in May, so I love, it doesn't necessarily naturally follow, but I do love the smell of Mayflower. It's really redolent of new beginnings, spring. I just love it.
And of course, Mayflower, like elderflower, the smell shifts quite dramatically.
Yes, it does.
At the stage of the flowering. So when the flowers are really fresh, it's quite different from, say, two-day-old flowers.
Yes.
And in the older flowers, there's even a slightly rotting-like smell to them.
Well, some people say it's a bit like cat's pee, but,
Yes. Well, elderflowers particularly, yes.
Trust me to bring the poetic down to the prosaic there, but the combination of solid information with the more ethereal quality of the experience is something that I was really excited to find in this project. You usually only get one or the other. We'll hear more from Nathaniel in a few minutes, but first, it's time for another short break. Back right after this.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on the world's number one talk health radio station. Yes, it's UK Health Radio. And today I'm with herbalist Nathaniel Hughes, whose collaboration with artist Fiona Owen has just been published in book and card deck form. It's called Wild Enchantments, and I can't say it often enough, Fiona's illustrations are just magical. They're not only botanically accurate, but also show the whole plant from flower and berry down to the roots. And that's all surrounded by symbols and wildlife. And here's Nathaniel again to tell us more.
I think it was important that all the paintings, and particularly the sketches in the book, are botanically accurate.
Yeah.
So she does an incredible job of weaving together that botanical accuracy with the metaphorical and the lyrical.
No, she does. Absolutely. And, you know, as I say, they are beautiful. You can lose yourself in them. Now, we've talked about, and you've got mistletoe here as well, which is another favourite of mine. And she has an apple showing in that picture as well, which obviously mistletoe is known for growing on apple trees, amongst others. I used to have some apple trees where I lived once in North Herefordshire and had lots of mistletoe there. And I'm quite fond of mistletoe. And the lovely thing you say about mistletoe is born of bird and tree, never touching earth, of sky and stars and dark solstice light. Because one of the points you make about mistletoe is that it never actually touches the ground. It grows on a tree. The seed is planted in the tree bark. It grows on the tree bark. Birds eat the berries and they take the seed to another tree. And it gets planted there.
Absolutely.
And I'd never thought of it that way before.
No, it's quite an amazing thought, isn't it? that there could be generations and generations of mistletoe that has never touched the ground.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, then people pick it to kiss under at Christmas. But that's another aspect of it that you talk about, if I recall rightly.
Well, I think one thing I did is part of writing this was trying to really get to the bottom of some research and really not take anything at face value, because the thing about herbalism is the more you dive into any story, the more ambiguous it becomes. Quite. Where that story came from and where it originated. There's a lot of repetition that happens in herbalism, and I think that is part of the reason for making this book entirely experiential. You know, so there's very little secondhand information. It's firsthand information, because something can get lost with too many repetitions. But this the story of mistletoe. What I did find is there's older Norse traditions of it being a plant for making peace under, for laying down weapons under.
Mm.
And it's sort of interesting to reflect on how that might have turned into a place one kisses under.
I think it's great. I love that.
Yes. Yeah, to lay down our armor and find connection.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and so the book is full of little things like that, which I loved, and I haven't, you know, read it all, but I've dived into bits that caught my eye, and
I don't think it's a book that you could read in one go.
No.
I think it's too dense for that. I think you need to sort of take a chapter or two at a time and let it percolate through.
Well, I think so, but also, you know, it's just going through the book, I'll see one of the paintings, one of the illustrations, and I'll think, oh, that's gorgeous. And then I'll be drawn to the words. And then, you know, so there is a journey. You said that it's a bit like a journey. It is, you know, you see this gorgeous painting and then you think, oh, you know, oh, yeah, mistletoe. Oh, yeah. Oh, I never knew that about it. Oh, you know, and things reveal themselves to you. That's not working with the cards as an oracle deck or a plant wisdom deck, but just it just takes you on a journey of revelation, which I think is gorgeous. And, you know, I've got one question which may be going through some people's minds right now. Mm-hmm. Herbalism, we know, and you're a herbalist, is an age-old way of medicating, shall we say. Now, we're talking about this book and the card deck being a way of moving through all of that, having an experience, you know, having a learning experience, you know, experiencing the plant without the plant being there. Mm-hmm. Now, would you go as far as to say that on that quantum level, by engaging with that plant, some healing could occur?
Could you rephrase that?
So we don't have the plant in front of us, but we are, yes, we're feeling into the plant, well, through the words, through the vision.
Yeah. So one way I often put that is, if you say you visited an incredible mountain somewhere, the fact that you're 2,000 miles away from that mountain doesn't change the existence of that mountain. It still exists. The beingness of it exists. The consciousness of it exists. And in the same way, you don't necessarily need the physical plant right there for the consciousness of it to exist. So yes.
So you're tapping into the consciousness. It's just, you know, I know that some people will be sitting there thinking, well, does that mean that you can actually get the healing effect of that plant?
Absolutely. But I think it takes a bit more understanding and discipline to let that healing in. Or more, to be more specific, I think it takes choice.
I think it takes
choice to let that in.
Yeah.
So you can experience a realm of consciousness, say St. John's wort, and that can just be an experience and then it's gone. Or it can be an experience that you take as a teacher and you choose to let in. And what I've discovered in my work in my clinic is that conscious choice, that active sovereign point of choice the individual makes, is critical. And that point of choice is like stepping through a doorway of commitment to yourself. And it's so easy. I think one problem we have that can happen throughout medicine is a power dynamic of practitioner-client, where in many subtle ways, the practitioner is actually making the choices and the client is handing over their sovereignty to them. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it's really good to be conscious of what's happening there. And particularly over the past 15 years, I've been really trying to deconstruct what happens within a therapeutic encounter and what it means for the choices and the journeys to come from the other, not from me. So I'm there as a companion on their journey and their choices. And when you do that, the potency of the medicine is so much more. I mean, it's quite possible to work in a way that I hold a space of practitioner and I bring the consciousness and I bring about changes. It is possible to do that. But the longer I've been in practice, the more I've pulled back from that, to taking a back seat, to letting them discover their own journey. And what I found is that actually creates more potent, often faster and often longer term healing responses when people are actively involved in their own journey. So that's going a little bit into sort of complexities of the power dynamics of a therapeutic encounter, but it feels really relevant here because it's about relationship.
Well, I absolutely applaud the fact that you're doing that because it's something that I am very aware of and conscious of and have been for a long, long time, and would love to see more people taking back their power in their own healing. And I'd love to see more practitioners just being the guide and the companion and, you know, and allowing the the patient, shall we say, to...
To
take control.
It's difficult to find the right word. I'm not so fond of either patient or client.
No, I don't like either, but but what do you say?
A fellow traveller, perhaps. It's difficult to find the language for that. But it's quite a sticky thing because it is actually deeply countercultural
I know.
to take that approach, and it's not easy. It's
I
not
know.
easy to because when I train herbalists, what I see is individuals have to deconstruct a lot of conditioning around what a healer is, what a doctor is, and they've got to deconstruct implicit authority projections within themselves before they can inhabit a space of inviting that in another. So there's a lot of work to do around that. It's not straightforward.
Oh yeah, totally agree with you on that. And no, I don't like the word healer. I don't like the word patient, client. I don't like any of those words. I don't. I never know what to use. So,
I mean,
maybe.
the way I think of myself is that I'm somebody who's committed my life to sitting within a council of plants and learning from them. And then people come to me, and for a while I'm a companion on their journey. So I'm drawing on what I've learned to help them. Often when people are at a bit of a dark point in their journey and feeling a bit lost. So I'm just walking alongside them until they start to really find their own confidence. And they're clear on their direction. That's how I tend to visualize my work now.
Well, I think that's brilliant, and I think it's an excellent place to end. Well, actually, I could talk to you for hours, but we only have a certain amount of time. It is a great place to end. Wild Enchantments, a fantastic book and card deck. Wild Enchantments by Nathaniel Hughes and Fiona Owen, and it's one of I don't often. I mean, I see lots of fabulous books, but this one is just, for me, special. So thank you so much for creating it or co-creating it with Fiona. And I always ask at the end of these interviews, where can people find out more about you, more about your work? Can people get in touch with you, learn from you? Where do they go?
I think the website for School of Intuitive Herbalism is the first place, and then that has links to where we sell the books from,
Okay.
and it has a resource page that keeps on growing, and a few online courses which are good starting places.
And that's School of Intuitive Herbalism dot.
I think it's just intuitiveherbalism.org.uk,
Is
I think.
it?
It's easy enough to find.
Okay.
And most of my work now is actually training. So it's broadly 4 to 7 year apprenticeship style trainings.
Fabulous. Yeah.
But now we've got quite a few graduates of the school. We're able to offer a lot more introductory level work, mentoring with graduates, and the online course. So there are ways into this work without that sort of 7 year commitment, which is, quite a major thing. And it's an incredible privilege to work with people who feel that calling and feel that
Yeah.
vocation.
Oh, it must be wonderful. And yeah, it's maybe it's something that I might have embarked on a while back, and but for now I'm just really, really pleased that I can meet people like you who are doing such fantastic work, and it really does chime with me. No, it's yeah, it's where I think it's where we need to be going, or where we need to be not going anywhere, because we just are. You know what I'm trying to say.
I think it's true. I think more than anything, we need to deepen into reciprocal relationship
Yes, thank
and
you.
respect. I think that's at the core of it. To
Yeah.
move away from sort of using nature as a commodity to being in dynamic relationship with it. I think that's what we really need.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for now. To anybody watching and listening, buy the book, get the cards, and delve into this, because I can't praise enough. And yeah. It's I'm going to be I'm this is going to be my winter thing. I'm going to be sitting in a corner, in a cozy corner, and opening up the book and just going down that rabbit hole. Although that doesn't sound very nice, but you know what I mean, going down a rabbit hole into the whole kind of landscape of what these different plants can do. So thank you so, so much.
33 rabbit holes, each branching into myriad of other rabbit holes.
Yeah, exactly. But that's lovely. I love that. That's brilliant. Thank you so much. Thank you for providing the rabbit holes. That's what I was saying.
That is what we set out to do.
Brilliant. Thanks so much. You can tell I was struggling to find my words there, but it is true that words are often so inadequate. I think this is where Nathaniel has excelled. And of course, the rich illustrations in the book and card deck are another level of communication. I found some of the stories and traditions enlightening. I'll certainly be looking at the tradition of kissing under the mistletoe in a different way from now on. I'd always thought of mistletoe as magical, but now I have a deeper understanding of why. And something I didn't mention is that the symbols layered into the spellbinding paintings are finished in gold leaf, another allusion to the alchemy inherent in them. I do feel that this combination of words, pictures, symbols and plants is to a great extent a material expression of the practical alchemy that I espouse and promote here. Connection with nature is at its core, allowing transformation to flow from that source. I really could have talked with Nathaniel for hours, and I'll be cherishing my interactions with wild enchantments for a long time to come. But right now, we've come to the end of the show. You can find out more about me and my work at thepracticalalchemist.uk. You can book a free exploratory call there or book a session with me if you're drawn to working with me as a guide to transformation or as energetic support for your healing. You'll find me on social media as The Practical Alchemist and on the YouTube channel Alternatively Speaking, where I'll be uploading a video of this conversation along with some of the images from the book very shortly. Thank you for listening. I'll look forward to you joining me another time here on UK Health Radio. But until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.